Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, good afternoon, and welcome back to Heritage Radio Network Community Sessions. I'm your host, Nathaniel Coburn, coming at your ear hole from the fishbowl in the back of Roberta's Pizza Establishment. Today in the studio, I'm sitting down with Adam Gerringer-Dunn and Vincent Milburn, co-owners of the Greenpoint Fish and Lobster Company, a new sustainable seafood marketing cafe in the heart of Tony Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Adam is the executive chef, and Vincent is the head fishmonger. Together, they plan to offer a super fresh seafood market and cafe with their progressive stamp on New England seafood. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
So you all are sort of at the crest of a wave right now, so to speak, in a new place in Brooklyn, hawking sustainable fish, and at a very interesting moment right now in the national conversation. Tell us a bit about the market, first off. How's it going right now in terms of the development of this project, and what can New Yorkers look forward to in the coming months?
Well, we came up with the idea around Thanksgiving, this past Thanksgiving. We found that there was just a real hole in the market. There was nowhere to buy fresh seafood that you felt good about. I live in Williamsburg. I've been here for 6 years, and I found myself going to Fulton Fish Market,
We end up going to Lobster Place to go get fresh seafood, and there's really just nowhere in North Brooklyn to get anything that's fresh that you feel good about. Sure. I mean, there's a few places around that don't really, they have previously frozen, or it's fish that are overfished.
Or simply fish that you don't know where it came from. It just says the name of the fish. You have no idea if it came from Southeast Asia or farmed in Europe or...
Or you don't even know if it says if it is what it says it is.
Exactly. There's been, we've been reading a lot about, a lot of media outlets been covering, in New York especially, the mislabeling of seafood. A lot in sushi restaurants and other seafood purveyors mislabeling, whether intentionally or not. There's a gap between the fisherman and the retail establishment. Mm-hmm. And then the plate and where the consumer is buying it, and a lack of information. And we felt like there was an opportunity there. Not an opportunity as much as we wanted a means of, we felt ourselves as a consumer without an option. Mm-hmm. And we really want a place where you can come in and everything that's being offered is sustainably sourced, harvested, fished, and you can feel good about buying it. And you're contributing to a movement, a sustainable movement for the longevity of these fisheries.
Absolutely. In the process of getting a restaurant set up, we hear anecdotes throughout the studio all the time, and in my personal life as well, of restaurant tours up and coming, and all of the hurdles that New York specifically has to offer anybody with a new business venture. What's it been like getting this going?
It's expensive.
It's very expensive.
We're learning that between build-out costs, rent prices, permitting, there's a lot of expenses that go into, starting a new business.
Sure.
Especially a brick-and-mortar location.
Paperwork-wise, I'm thinking of what's the office downtown where everybody has to go to get all the different kind of permits and everything like that. Do you find that New York is well-suited to this kind of venture as we get more and more into trying to do something that is this sustainable?
I think the consumer base is strong enough that we'll be able to make up for any sort of hardships that New York City deals us. But it has been prohibitively hard. But so far, it's been quite expensive, and it's been taking us 8 months to get to this point. And we're hoping to open in October, mid October, which I think is a good time for fish, especially when you're The fall time is really big with the seafood markets. So,
mm-hmm. Or Northeast oysters are at their best in the fall and leading into the holidays.
It's the ER months, right? Those are the ones you want
right.
to get the oysters in.
I mean, that's a little. It's not exactly
oversimplifying.
True, a little oversimplified, but it's a good rule to go by. I mean, you can get great oysters year round. We just had an event last month where we had West Coast oysters and Canadian oysters, and they were delicious, real nice and fresh.
What varieties?
There were Reach Islands from Washington State, and Tatamagouche from Canada.
I like that name. That's fun.
They're great. I mean, you can get fresh oysters year round, and we deal with a variety of different purveyors that provide whether they're small oyster farms or large oyster wholesalers. We've been able to get some great product in so far.
The Northeast or West Coast.
Mm-hmm. Now we hear the word sustainable so often today that it always it risks losing all meaning. In this context, what does sustainability mean to you all, and what are some of the guiding principles you look to with regard to the fish that you're going to be buying?
I mean, I see it, you know, sustainability and seafood meaning catching and farming seafood responsibly with the consideration, you know, for long-term health of fisheries and fish populations. And also, you know, trying to protect and maintain the livelihoods of the people that are farming and harvesting the product, you know, the seafood. And just being careful about the methods that you're using to harvest and source the food. So there are different methods of catching and harvesting seafood, trawling versus bottom dredging, gill netting, harpooning, long lining, hook and, you know, just hook and line, hook and traps and pots, trolling. Really depends on the fishery, the location, the environment. There are a lot of factors that go into it.
And so the fish that you'll be offering, we're going to know, like, the name of the guy that caught it. I mean, what kind of pole he used? Like,
yeah,
how? I mean, what kind of level of detail are we looking at?
Going to the captain might be a little bit of a stretch, but we're definitely going to have a story with each piece of fish that you buy, so you can come into the store and we can tell you, look, this. I know exactly where this came from and the story of how it got from there to here. Whether it's, I mean, the sustainability is such a tricky subject because a lot of the best seafood that is in sustainable numbers is coming out of Alaska, which obviously isn't the greatest thing when you have to fly it here if you want it the freshest. So it's not, you know, the best for the environment because you're using jet fuel. But
there's trade-offs.
There are trade-offs. The carbon footprint is a little you trade off, but yeah. It's a lot. We're really satisfied with the fact that we can get some of the freshest product that's also in numbers that aren't in danger of going extinct.
Well, we should talk about our means of, you know, a little bit of our means of getting fish. I mean, Vinny has a background in seafood and fish, and, you know, we feel that we were able to, for our market specifically, shorten the boat-to-table chain. So we have a means of telling our consumers, customers, where the fish was caught, how it was caught, when it was caught. So every piece of fish, like Vinny said, is going to have a story, and you can feel good about that story.
That's right, Vincent. You have a long family connection to the New England fishing industry. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my great-great-grandfather came over on a boat from Ireland in the 1870s, and he started fishing off the docks of Gloucester, Mass., and he apparently was a really great fisherman, and he was able to catch more than he needed, and he started selling it, and he ended up moving down to Boston, which is maybe like 30 miles south of Gloucester, and he started this wholesale seafood wholesaler, and it's still in existence today. I've worked there. I mean, it's a family business. My entire family works there, and either on the board of directors or actually on the floor. My one of my brothers is a driver right now. He's driving around and delivering fish to restaurants up in Greater Boston. And I did that for about 5 years, from 2006 to 2011.
You learned the ins and outs of the whole industry.
I sure did. Yeah, I was able to. I would go down to the docks and pick and be able to actually source my own seafood and say, like, this looks really good. I want this. Buy it. I was in charge of selling to. There's a retail division of the wholesale company, and we would sell it to restaurants in Boston, high end restaurants that either appreciate sustainability or are looking for it. I was able to, when I started, I was down there cutting the heads off salmon, you know, thousands of pounds at a time, which is not the best job.
So as somebody who's been intimately involved with that aspect of the supply chain, where's the breakdown with the huge controversy over mislabeling and misidentification? Like, at what point does that happen? Because if it's like, you can see it right there on the docks, you know it was caught.
Well, it's a matter of the quota system that the federal government has in place for a lot of the North Atlantic fisheries. There's a lot of it that's obviously fabricated when you come in and they weigh it on the docks in Gloucester and they say it's 2,000 pounds, which is actually 20,000. But it's just that a lot of these North Atlantic groundfish are so easy to catch by trawling means that you can, the technology is wonderful, which is why it's, people have been fishing for thousands and thousands of years, and it's only in the past 50 years that things have really gotten bad because we're able to just pull everything out of the bottom of the ocean. So it's a problem where there's a lot of supply, and you can just sell off. Once you have a piece of fish that's been filleted and chopped up, and you can't really tell what it is unless you do a DNA test, which is exactly what I think the LA Times was doing last year, testing all of the sushi restaurants, and they're finding that a lot of it was just regular old groundfish, and they were advertising as something else.
And in terms of the fish that you all will be buying and the suppliers will be buying from, I mean, is this a case of trust but verify, or how do you? Is it based on the relationship that you've established?
It is based on the relationship, not only my own familial relationships, but also just working in the market for so long. I've gained a lot of trust and connections throughout the whole Eastern Seaboard, actually. Mm-hmm. But the proliferation of social media allows us to, I can be up on the docks of South Boston tomorrow and I can take a picture and send it, and then we can tweet it, Instagram it, put it on Facebook, and everyone can see, wow, look at that piece. And then we can bring it down whole, it can be the same exact fish, we can cut it right in front of them, we can make sure that everything is right in front of them.
I think a lot of the issues with fillet is once it's cut, there's a lot of white flaky fish, mm-hmm. That people like to eat, and it's hard to tell once it's filleted what the actual fish was originally.
Sure.
And it's easy to pass it off as something else.
You guys hear about these this whole QR code thing that's happening with the sushi?
I've heard a little bit about it. It's kind of an interesting take, and using technology to trace and trust.
I feel like it's gonna be like Laserdisc or something, it's like, here's this technology, let's use it, and then
right. No, I think a lot of it comes down to trust and knowing who you're buying your fish from, and if you trust who you're buying your fish from. I think there's some people out there that, are put profit over consumer protection and quality, and really, they say, oh, who cares? We'll cut it up and we'll tell them it's this because, so-and-so fish, it looks the same, tastes the same, but it costs us, $4 bucks a pound less, and nobody's going to know the difference. And
I mean, when you're going to come into our market, Adam and I will be right behind the counter, and you can come in and talk to us. And we want it to be a community experience where we're able to, people can come in and, it'll be more than just a market. We're going to have classes at night where you can come in and learn how to shuck an oyster.
Oh, fun.
It'd be really fun.
How to prepare a lobster, how to properly break down a lobster, mm-hmm. Assortment. We like to bring in some chefs, have them showcase their signature, seafood dish or something like that.
Now, Adam, you're the executive chef of this place, but you're coming to us from a very different background, right?
My background's in music, book bands around Brooklyn, a couple venues, and been doing that from the moment I went to college, and as a freshman started booking bands on campus, and then went to school in Maine, Colby College, and kind of actually that's where I really developed my taste for seafood. But ever since I've been doing music ever since, but I work from home and I kind of work my own hours, and I started cooking all my meals, and I've been a pescatarian actually for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where this started, was I was cooking and wanting to find protein, and I stopped eating meat mostly for environmental and moral reasons, and wanted a substitute, protein substitute. and wanted to start cooking more fish and eating more fish, but there's a lot of fish I didn't feel good about eating and preparing.
Sure.
I started cooking a lot on my own and realized that seafood is actually healthier, faster, and easier to prepare than chicken, beef, and pork. And it's really simple. And, you know, I would go to tailgates, you know, for a Jets game or something, and everyone's bringing sausages and steaks and whatnot. And I'd bring a bag of clams, a bag of little necks, and put them on the grill. And, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, is that, how are you, do you know it's safe? How do you know it's ready? It's, you know, clams, you know, when they open, they're ready. If they don't open, you throw them out. And then, you know, taking clams, putting a little bit of barbecue sauce on them or something, and people were going crazy. And I just started, you know, really my kind of seafood cooking philosophy is simplicity is what it's about. And seafood, you know, has this natural saltiness and brininess and doesn't really need a whole lot to it. Some butter, lemon, garlic, olive oil, salt and pepper is pretty much what you need from all you need for most. And, you know, that's kind of how I started. And I just started cooking for a lot of people. You know, I'd be preparing somebody, everybody expected me to bring, I was like the fish guy, and people expected me at parties to bring some kind of seafood, lobster or clams, mussels, oysters, whatever. And, people were impressed and people were saying, you should think about doing something with this. And sure. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm a music guy. I'm not sure. And then one day I had this idea and I talked to a couple of food professionals I'm friends with who work in the city, and they said, you know, this is something that people need and people want. And then I connected with Vinny and said, hey, you know, what do you think about this? And he said, we got to do this. You know, yeah. We got to try. We got to make a push. There's a need there. There's a demand there. And you know, who better to do it than us?
Yeah. No, you see a problem, and the instinct to solve it yourself, I think, is a very good one. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, as you go into this new element of your career, what who and what has influenced your cooking? What do you?
You know, my family is my parents have a place in Cape Cod, and I've been going up there mm-hmm. every summer for the last 20 years or so. Went to school in Maine. You know, first day of college freshman year, it's a big lobster bake for everybody. And you know, lobster is one of those, kind of epitomizes the simplicity of cooking seafood to me. It's mm-hmm. you steam it or boil it and you dip it in butter.
No, less is more sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, and it's amazing. And it's one of those things when I started cooking, I was like, oh, what's really easy? Oh, lobster sounds exotic and expensive, but it's really, really simple. And a lot of what we want to do and what I want to do is instill confidence in people to be able to prepare and cook seafood on their own. I think right now we're seeing a ton of seafood restaurants opening up around the city and in Brooklyn. And for me, I actually have trouble going to some of these places because I know how simple the preparations are and how what the actual cost of some of the seafood is. And, you know, lobster, you know, you can get for $8.99 a pound, $7.99 a pound sometimes. And you go and you get a whole lobster dinner for $34. And I know it's boiled or steamed. There's no sous vide. There's no fancy preparation. And, you know, this whole thing was like, I'm that person who wants to just cook this stuff on my own. And there's no, you know, I know how easy it is. And I want to just kind of share that with everybody and let people, you know, empower people to cook this stuff on their own.
The relationship between the fishermen and that you're going to be buying from, like, is this a long-standing thing? Are you bringing a lot of names with you into this venture, or are you, and where are they from?
Well, yes and no. There's a lot of people that I know from New England area that are already going out and fishing, and there are some people that are doing day boat stuff just on their own. It's not their day job. They're doing it on the weekends and coming back with, you know, whatever and selling it on the docks. There's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But also we've found that there's such a demand for a fresh seafood market in North Brooklyn that, you know, we've just been out talking to people and doing PR and throwing events and hosting seafood dinner parties, and people are just, you know, coming up to us, and we're getting a lot of contact. So there's a lot of different sources that we can get for seafood, down to just people that are out on the boat fishing, or whole fleets, or there'll be a whole different amount. But again, we want to make sure that everything is traced back to at least one boat, one person, one vessel, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So it, because I have this image in my head that it's this like life of piracy on the high seas, on the docks of New York. Like there's this lingering rumor of all kinds of shenanigans that take place in the New York fish marketplace. It's not quite like that anymore.
Well,
or is it?
It can be, but I think that a lot of the fishermen, especially a lot of people in the fish business, they like to be a little bit on the dirty side, and they like to trump up their, I'm a fisherman, but there are still a few unscrupulous activities going on up there. Anyone who's been there will know exactly what I'm talking about.
But sure.
It's not quite exactly, the Caribbean of the 1700s.
It's good enough.
It is.
So what's coming up next? I know you all had an event in June, and you just mentioned some more. What do we have to look forward to in August?
Well, we're going to be throwing a party August 18th. This last one was in a backyard of a bar in Greenpoint. This one is going to be on a boat. August 18th, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., we got a boat that's going to be leaving the India Street Pier in Greenpoint. We're going to have a couple kinds of food. We'll offer, probably do lobster rolls. We're going to do some oysters, ceviche. There's going to be live music, band, and a DJ. We'll do some demos, some cooking instruction and demos on shucking oysters, maybe breaking down lobsters, figuring out exactly what that's going to entail. But the party is going to be the 18th.
And also open bar.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Open bar.
Open bar, where do I sign up?
You can't sign up quite yet because we're still organizing it. But, if you go to our website, which is greenpointfishandlobster.com, we'll have some information in the coming days.
Fantastic. Adam, Vincent, thank you both so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you, Nathaniel.
Ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to visit the Greenpoint Fish and Lobster Company opening this fall, 2013, in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Come by for a constantly changing selection of fish and sustainably sourced seafood, whole and filleted fish, shellfish, crustaceans, prepared foods, specialty cookware, cutlery, and beer and wine. You can visit them at www.greenpointfishandlobster.com or follow their progress on Twitter at @GreenpointFish. I'm your host, Nathaniel Coburn, thanking you for tuning in to this broadcast of HRN Community Sessions. This program, like all of our over 30 weekly programs, is available for download on iTunes, Stitcher, and of course at our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.